Dr. Dutcher, do we know anything about the biology of these tumors as opposed to tumors that are more aggressive?
Well, what we know about the aggressive tumors is they tend to have more aggressive histology right from the beginning under the microscope. I mean, there probably are a number of genetic pathways that are activated that we haven't defined yet. But, for example, the sarcomatoid variant where the histology is really quite different and looks like sarcoma, far more aggressive with a far shorter median survival expected. But this kind of patient where there's one tumor and then a year later or 2 years later there's another tumor, I've seen people actually have gone 20, 30 years with just surgical resections one after another, you know, long before there was much systemic therapy available. So I think it is a strange disease and you individualize by the patient and by the patient's own natural history of how they're behaving. I mean, if he had come back with 4 or 5 mets, obviously we'd be having a different discussion.
I would bet that this patient has an extremely well-differentiated clear cell, probably a grade 1 or 2, and will likely continue to behave like that. Why he has metastatic disease when the majority of well-differentiated clear cells do not metastasize is unknown. Becky Furman and Juan Rosai at the University of Minnesota sort of intuited this in the 70s, that clear cell came in these different garden varieties and showed a pretty different prognosis. That's been repeatedly confirmed for a grade. It's been incorporated into the UCLA system and other systems. So the reason for that is probably that these are the tumors that are most likely just purely VHL mutated. They have a specific behavioral pattern programmed into them, probably with not a lot of secondary mutations. Although a lot of that stuff we don't know, we infer. And it's the same with the VHL syndrome. Most of the tumors that develop in the VHL syndrome are very well differentiated and clear cell. So this seems to be the pure, if you will, the purest of the VHL clear cell syndrome type of cancers.
Keeping in mind that we are talking to an audience of busy practitioners who like to focus on what's clinically important, but let's explore a little bit about the VHL gene and some of the biology of renal cell cancer and how that relates to some of these new agents that we're hearing so much exciting data about. Dr. Dutcher, can you talk a little bit about what we understand about that?
The VHL gene is thought to be a tumor suppressor gene that is part and parcel of the inherited von Hippel-Lindau syndrome that develops a number of different tumors, including kidney cancer. But interestingly, from the point of view of sporadic renal cell, the type of kidney cancer that we see with the big tumor, not the multiple little tumors, about anywhere in some series from 70 to 80% of people have also inactivation of this gene by methylation or mutation. So it seems to be part of sporadic renal cell. And what that means is that you lose control over the hypoxia-inducible factors. They're upregulated, and you end up with a cascade that leads to stimulation of vascular endothelial growth factor and enhanced angiogenesis. And it's thought that by losing control from this gene, the angiogenesis pathway is constitutively on, and thus the tumors are growing. And so all of the drugs that have been presented in some part affect that pathway and inhibit the angiogenesis pathway.
Dr. Pikowski, can you go through a little bit about these agents and sort of where they work and the pattern that Dr. Dutcher just described?
Janice described the biology of the VHL protein and how it complexes with a series of other proteins, and then ubiquinates HIF, and then ultimately HIF's degraded. When HIF's not degraded, you have these factors that are upregulated, both genes and growth factors. The drugs that we now are looking at as potentially useful are bevacizumab, which really directly binds a growth factor, vascular endothelial growth factor, and complexes with it and prevents its ligation to the receptor. All growth factors have to ligate receptors in order to induce signaling and cascades that ultimately lead to the effects of their ligation. So the other way of inhibiting the effects of these factors is to inhibit the receptor. You can do that with an antibody. Right now, we don't have an antibody that we can use, although there are some entering clinical trials. We're utilizing small molecule inhibitors of tyrosine phosphorylation predominantly. The two that received the most attention at this meeting were sorafenib and sunitinib. And the last one is a drug called CCI-779, which inhibits mTOR by a slightly different mechanism in terms of how it inhibits the HIF pathway. So we've got three sort of alternatives, if you will, of different mechanisms that can result in inhibition of this pathway, which we refer to as the VEGF pathway in general. But there are other, clearly other factors like platelet-derived growth factor that play a role here.
So Dr. Vogel is saying for the busy practitioner in practice, could we summarize it just by saying angiogenesis is important in clear cell carcinoma of the kidney?
Yeah, I think most of us learned that in residency, and that when you cut into a kidney tumor, it bleeds a lot, and the ultimate cause was found to be the van Hippel-Lindau, and ultimately the upregulated HIF and the 200-plus genes that HIF regulates.
We're going to focus.
You must have been a resident later than I was, because we didn't know about angiogenesis when
all
I was a resident.
All we knew was they bled.
But I'm impressed about this.
No, I remember distinctly, because it was an orthopedic surgeon who said, we had to replace this hip. He said, you've got to be very careful. They could almost bleed out during the surgeries.
Right.
But that was about it. That's about all we knew. They were bloody.
No, we actually do have a case of collecting duct carcinoma, papillary carcinoma, but I think we're probably not going to get to it. But Dr. Dutcher, what percent overall of these tumors are non-clear cell, or the same mechanisms involved?
About 75% of renal cell tumors are clear cell, and the others are not. In surgical series, papillary is about 10 to 15%, collecting duct about 5%, and then there's some other variants, medullary and chromophobe. We do not think that they are as dependent upon the VEGF pathway as the other subtypes, although we don't want to be too smart and say that you can't use anti-angiogenesis agents in conjunction with treatment of those diseases somehow, but we don't know yet how to do that. But bottom line is that they're not primarily stimulated by VHL, and in fact don't have VHL mutations for the most part. And so we tend to look at other types of treatments that might affect their growth.
How often do you see overlap between the histologic features? You'll see some clear cell and some papillary.
Well, there's papillary, except at very special, very big places that do a lot of their primary pathology, like Cleveland Clinic or Sloan Kettering or the NIH. Pathologists are not really distinguishing. So there's a thing called clear cell with papillary features, and it just depends on how closely they want to look for the little vascular bundle that the papilla is supposed to be around, which is supposed to define true papillary. Otherwise, it's fronds of cells called papillary features. And truly, when we get a lot of referral cases that have already had surgery, and the pathology reports do not yet distinguish between subtypes, and there's a lot of mixed. And we don't know whether those are really mixed, or are they clear cell with papillary features, or are we being too much of a splitter?
Do you make a therapeutic difference between those mixed ones versus a clear cell, in the practical sense versus practitioners?
I had a patient with a papillary carcinoma, could never get any of the trials. I don't think anyone even knows if these new
right,
drugs
but
work.
But I think what you folks are referring to is the fact that sometimes you get a report that says clear cell carcinoma with papillary features or some such thing, and that's a clear cell carcinoma, generally okay. speaking, and we treat it accordingly. The same with sarcomatoid. Most of the sarcomatoid tumors are clear cell just because of the frequency of clear cell cancer. They're going to be clear cell. Now, you can have papillary tumors that are sarcomatoid also, but just the frequency of clear cell cancer makes that the case. Now, the alternative is you could look at the individual genotype of each one of these tumors. That's time-consuming, difficult. There are companies that do that right now. We don't do it routinely. We do it more as a research tool than anything else at this point in time.